what I've learned and done through all these different businesses, I realized that you could be successful at a lot of things and still feel like a failure. And what I mean by that is, if you're not operating for the God-given intended purpose of why you were created, you're going to always feel like a failure.
We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smart Destiny podcast, where this time we are joined by the legend that is Riley Meek. Riley is the founder and CEO of the King's Council. He is a badass entrepreneur. I'm going to tell you why. He has taken 8 separate companies past 7 or 8 figures in the first year, accumulating nearly $200 million in revenue in the last decade. That is extreme success, folks. And today we're going to tap into that. We're going to pull at that thread. Riley has since moved, and he is now embarking on a give back mission where, as the founder and CEO of the King's Council, he is coaching a community of kingdom entrepreneurs and equipping those entrepreneurs with the tools and expertise they need to crush whatever their chosen path is right now. The theme is entrepreneurs, and Riley's theme is he can sell anything because he's got the processes and the policies. If that wasn't enough, he has also written 3 books, and his third one is about to be published, like imminently, folks, like in the next week. And so we're going to talk about that. It's called The 7-Day Blueprint. And that 7-Day Blueprint is going to teach us how to create a business, how to create a relationship. And if we're already in one or either of those, how to audit it and figure out why it's not going perfectly, why it's not going how we want it to go, and make those changes necessary. So it's going to be a fun show today. I'm excited for it. So without further ado, let's welcome him to the stage. Riley, how's it going?
Hey, Martin, doing well, man. This is going to be a good time, man. Happy to be here.
Oh, I'm pumped. So first off, whereabouts in the world are you, Riley?
Oh, man, I am in Minnesota. So here in the U.S., Minnesota is, we're getting into that time of year where our weather is shifting, man. So it's about to get cold here.
Love it. Well, you've definitely got one of the better audio setups of the guests that I've had on here as well. So that's really cool. You're coming across crisp and velvety. So that will help you as you paint as a word picture for this next segment. So in this next segment, we're really trying to understand where you come from, Riley. What was your story? How did you transition into the painful, risky, lonely world of entrepreneurship? What did you do just before that? And what really was that final straw that made you take the plunge or the leap, or however you want to describe it? You choose, but tell us all about it.
Oh, man, I feel like I don't even know where to begin with this. So because I feel like I've lived, I was telling my wife this the other day, like I feel like I've lived like 13 different lives, and I'm only 37, man. So hopefully I have a few other lives in my tool belt as well. But when my entrepreneur journey, it really started at a young age. At the age of 15, I worked here in the States. We had what's called minimum wage at that time, was $5.15 an hour. I was like, hey, I'm going to get a job because I need to put some gas in my tank, and I want to take my girlfriend on a date, right? Like I grew up in South Dakota, which is, it's a great place to be from. I'm just going to say that. There's not a whole lot going on there anymore. And so to get anywhere, like you had to drive a good hour to get anywhere. And so the only place to work was at our local gas station for that minimum wage. I worked 1 8-hour shift. I did the math in my head and I was like, yeah, there's no chance I'm doing that again. And my very first day on the quote unquote job was my last. And that's actually what kind of started my entrepreneur journey. And the crazy thing is, Martin, like I didn't really know what that meant. In the town that I grew up in, it's not like I had a whole lot of examples to live by. And so I found myself really having to be intentional with getting myself around the right people that, when I look back now, it's easy for me to say, it was like I looked for the fruit in other people's life that I wanted, and then I just got around them. I did anything that I could do to be around those people, and sometimes it was paying money to go get mentored or coached by them, attend. Man, once a month, I found myself driving up to Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is where I live now, and it was a one-way trip, 5 hours one way. And I found myself driving every single month up to attend what was called a success training seminar. And an STS, we called them. And it rocked me, man. It was just something that I could not wait until the next one every single month. But I was coming out of those with applicable things to consume, to digest, which a lot of it was built around mindset, right? Because, you know, we are all the products of our environment, whether we like it or not, right? And so if you're just letting life happen at you, probably you're the product of not that great of environment, right? Where it's just you think the way that your folks thought, or if you look around your five closest friends, we've heard that, like, we're the product of them. And I was no different. And when I realized that I didn't want any of the fruit in the people's life that I was around, I was like, all right, I got to go find some new fruit and just get around some other people. And that was the big shift in my life from at that age of 15, man, which from there it was more about taking action to find out what the heck I want to do in life. And so, bro, done lots of different things, from selling vitamins and nutritional supplements to personal fitness training, to selling siding and windows and bathtubs and insurance products and business valuations. And dude, you name it, I pretty much have probably sold it. And it wasn't really until everything that I had done was selling like one-on-one, which was, you know, great. I love the idea.
How were you like one-on-one in what format? Sorry.
Yeah. So it'd be essentially, it could be from, hey, my name is Riley, to taking them on, you know, a sales pitch, whether it was selling a vitamin supplement or a home remodeling project, right? Sometimes it was a $100 sale. Sometimes it was a $50,000 sale. And I kind of worked my way up through that, because as much as I love the idea of this kind of entrepreneurship concept, I didn't really know that I could start a business. It was always just, well, I'm going to go sell something, right? And if I had something that somebody wanted, like, I'm going to figure out how to sell it. And in all these different positions that I took, man, it was like, hey, you can earn what you're worth. That's what they would tell you. It's like your earning ability is uncapped. And as much as I wanted to believe them, I knew they were still full of crap, because I could only work a certain amount of hours in a day before I was emotionally just freaking exhausted, right? If I'm doing a 3-hour presentation to try to get somebody to buy something, I can only do 3 or 4 of those in a day before I'm just tapped out. And so I realized then, okay, I could manage people, I could earn an override, but still this belief that I can make, you know, earn as much as I want, my earning ability is uncapped, I never bought into it. And that's why I think I just kept going to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. And bro, when coming off of a failed business venture, I was at the age of 24, I'd actually flown to Mexico, lived in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico for 5 months for an attempt at a new company expanding into that market, crushing it for 5 months. And, you know, the fifth month in there, the government stepped in and said, yeah, you guys can't sell this here anymore. Ooh. And so I found myself on a flight back to the States. And when I had moved down there, you know, I'd made a decent amount of money, at least, you know, mid 6 figures up at this point. At the age of 24, I think I'm still, you know, I think I'm something special. But bro, I had invested like everything into this opportunity. I'd leased out my condo up here in Minnesota. And when I found myself on that flight back, I realized that not only was I virtually broke financially, but I was homeless as well, because I'd leased out my condo. So I found myself sleeping on my sister's couch. And that was kind of that big, like, what the heck am I going to do next? You know, like, I'm 24. And naturally, dude, the smartest thing that anybody could possibly do was just to get your wife pregnant, right? Like, yeah, you're broke, yeah, homeless. Yeah, totally. Why don't you have a kid on top of it? And that's what I did. And so it's kind of like, put your back against the wall and now you got to figure this thing out. And that was really when I came across this new concept of selling one to many, or selling to in a seminar standpoint. And it freaking rocked my world, man, because everything that I had done, as I mentioned, was literally just selling to one-on-one. And you know, I I would do a presentation. I either got a yes or no. And then it was next. Yeah, presentation, yes or no. And I could make no money in a day, or I could make, you know, a decent amount. But when I saw this concept of filling a room of my ideal client and only doing one presentation, this is what blew my mind, man. I was like, what really actually ticked me off with this was that I didn't think of this concept. So I can't say that I'm, you know, super smart here. All I did was took this concept, and I really think we've perfected it here over the last decade. But it was essentially filling a room of people that are interested, you know, at least slightly interested in what we have, fed them a nice steak dinner. And if I did a good enough job where they knew me, they liked me, ultimately they trusted me, I could ask for that one-on-one appointment to ultimately present price or whatever the product or their service it was that I was selling. It was just that next step where then I could maybe, you know, apply a little pressure or utilize some closing techniques if need be. And that's what I did, man. It should have been the summer of 2011. I had $673 in my bank account. And thankfully I had a credit card, but most importantly, dude, I had a real big freaking reason why. And it was because I was broke. I was broken. And it was like, this is, I had to make this thing work. And that's what I did. I filled our first event with a handful of people. I made a few sales, not a lot, but I failed my way through this thing. And then I didn't just go take that money and buy something sweet or a car. I reinvested back into the business. And fast forward 6 months from July of 2011 to the end of that year, I'd done 2.1 million in sales. And that's when I was like, all right, this thing works. And from there it was, how do we really scale this thing? So 2012, just pouring a little gas on it. We did 12 million that year, another 12 million the following. And then that's when I realized it, the product, bro, wasn't really, it was irrelevant. It was, the product was virtually irrelevant. It was a system, a continual flow of leads and sales into a business that I realized is what worked. And then that's what had allowed me to really just look at, like, what else could I sell through this formula? And then that's what we've done, as you mentioned in the bio, that's, you know, generated us nine figures here over the last decade. It's been epic, man. It's been a fun ride. It's been stressful, a lot of highs, a lot of lows, and just figuring out what I really wanted to do in life, which is kind of where we're at now with, you know, why we're even talking here, talking about our coaching program,
beautiful,
what we're doing now, man.
All right. So, I mean, that's a heck of a journey. I mean, we're absolutely roller coaster. I mean, first off, I am definitely curious, what on earth can you sell in Mexico that is somehow not allowed to be sold in Mexico? I mean,
my parole officer said I could. No, I'm just kidding. We were just selling vitamins, dude. It was actually a network marketing company. So it was like, you know, pills, vitamins, supplements that at the end of the day, they said there was like one ingredient, but you know, we were in Mexico. It's like, we just didn't have enough money to grease enough palms to get this thing pushed through. And that's when they booted us out of the country.
Awesome. All right. So, but what there is all the way through here, there is a recurring theme of sales. And I think we were talking about this off air. I believe sales is absolutely everywhere. It's not just when you're physically trying to get someone to give you their money in exchange for something. I mean, like I have a 4-year-old and an 8-month-old, and I'm selling constantly. I'm selling the broccoli, right? I'm selling the why it's time for bed now, and it's important that they close their eyes and stop shouting, right? There's lots of things we sell that's outside of work, and there's outside of work and outside of in exchange for money. Now, obviously, more relevant is the exchange for money side of things, certainly to the audience listening today. And I think, you know, it's a skill. It's a skill that I see as a recurring skill amongst the most successful people that we've had on the show as well. So, what sales-based things can you share with us today? Right, I realize that's really broad. Let me narrow that down for you. Like, what simple techniques might businesses apply to their digital sales process that could improve the results that they're getting?
Yeah, man. So first off, I think we got to break it down to the mindset that we have around sales. And as you mentioned, like, we're all in sales. Whether you, I mean, you're listening to this right now, and we could have stay-at-home mom or dad, or, you know, we have some maybe an IT or an inventor or whatever it is. If you got a product or a service, you're in sales. I'll say this. If you're in a relationship, you're in sales. Dude, I'm selling my wife every freaking day why she shouldn't leave me, right? and if we would approach it that way, the problem is just with culture, society, I mean, even movies, they make out sales to be this four-letter thing of, like, you know, just these sleazy, slimy tin men or car salesmen. But the root word of sales, bro, it's a Norwegian word, and it's selje, S-E-L-J-E. And all that actually means is to serve. So if you start with that mindset of, like, listen, I'm here to serve first and foremost. I want to serve my spouse. I want to serve my customer, whatever that is. Like, just get to the root of that. Now, obviously, if we're serving well enough, we're going to get certain things back, right? If I take care of my wife the way she wants to be taken care of, you know, I'm going to get taken care of, right? And no different than your customers. It's like, hey, if you're going to serve them appropriately, there's a value that they're going to attach to it. And ultimately, they'll pay you what you're worth. And so if we can start there, that's the mindset. And then break it into, like, okay, if I'm in sales, what does that actually mean? And I think from a corporate structure standpoint, there's usually a marketing team, and then there's a sales team. And unfortunately, a lot of times these departments aren't speaking the same language, right? And what I've learned more than anything over the last decade is the importance of the continuity between the marketing team to the sales team to even the fulfillment team, where if there's anything that's not, doesn't line up, right, there's going to cause issues within this flow or this pipeline that we call it. And here's the reason why I say this, because all the different companies that we've started, I have not given a rip about any of the products that we've sold, man. I don't care. Now, morally and ethically, they got to be great, right? I want to vet them out. I'm going to make sure that it's the best product that I feel confident. I'm convicted enough to know that I'm serving in the right manner. If you're selling some shady crap, like, that's on you, dude. Like, but you should be convicted enough that you're bringing the best product and the service that you possibly can to the marketplace. If you're that way, then, because in the reason I bring this up, Martin, is I grew up first hearing that, you know, if you follow your passion, you'll never work a day in your life. And I bought into that right away. And then I realized that the things that I was passionate about, I was going to go broke real quick, right? Like, so it's like, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to follow my passion. Like, one of my business partners now, his wife is extremely passionate about rocking babies. It's like, yeah, you ain't gonna make any money doing that, right? So your husband, Scott is his name, my business partner, he better go make a boatload of money so she can go rock a bunch of babies, right? So that I realized as an entrepreneur and from a sales standpoint, I needed to follow opportunity, but always bring my passion with me. And that's really what I've done. From the moment I saw the seminar format, I was like, hey, what could I sell? What could I sell? What do people need? And so head on a swivel, like looking at the marketplace and what was needed, it was identifying that. But I did know that people do not buy what they need. They buy what they want. So as much as people need certain things, it's like everybody needs to eat broccoli and you know, healthy food, but they don't do it, right? Like, why don't we do it? Because it's not what we want, right? And then we're left with those ramifications. So I realized the importance of marketing to what people want. And then once you get them into your ecosystem, your hemisphere, call it, then you can give them what they actually need in order to be a longtime customer or, you know, depending upon what your product or service is. So we always talk about, we use a lot of fishing analogies in our business. And so, which I'm a terrible fisherman. I actually hate fishing, but it's great for analogies. And so we talk about fishing with corn dog. And what I mean by that is there's not a fish in nature that would ever live a quality life eating corn dog. But if I put corn dog on a hook and I throw it in the lake, that fish is going to bite that freaking thing every single time. And once I've got the fish, the hook on the line, now I can get them in my boat. Essentially, I've reeled them in and I can give them what they need in order to live that quality life, you know, a sustaining life. And that's the same thing that we do from our what I had mentioned before is just the continuity from marketing, but there needs to be a flow through the entire sales process that prevents people from feeling, you know, bait and switched, or this isn't what I thought that I was getting into, or, hey, you promised me this and now you're giving me that. So there's definitely expertise that's involved with that, or a craft that you can get good at, but speaking to their want, giving them then what they need so they can be that lifelong customer for you over the long haul. So long answer to your question, bro, but I hope that works.
Absolutely. And I think so you said it's important that the marketing department speak to the sales department. I also think that in the e-commerce world, there is a blurred lines. For the longest time, I referred to it in one sentence, like sales and marketing, like marketing and sales, like it was one word, like it was like it's combined, yep. Right? You know, on the same plate. And that's because in the e-commerce space, and I think this is important for the audience listening, in the e-commerce space, a lot of the marketing is done from the advertising and the copy, and then the sales part is done by the page, right? Which is just following like a sort of e-commerce formula where they click an add to cart button, they click a checkout button, they enter their details, kind of thing, autopilot. And one of the things that we've learned in our digital businesses since the iOS 14 changes and should we say Facebook doing a not as good a job as it once did of just bringing like ravenous buyers to you, so you didn't really need to do that good a job of selling. Is splitting out the marketing and sales process, and we take our customers through like a sales journey to buy, as opposed to just kind of marketing them and then just plonking them in a generic sales thing. So it's really interesting as well. But again, it needs to be congruent. I really like the analogy as well of like you need to give them what they want so that you can then serve them what they need later on down the line. So you've got a book coming out. And it's your third book. And if I'm not mistaken, it's called The 7-Day Blueprint. Yeah. We talked about it a little bit in the introduction, but those were my words, not yours. Do you want to tell us about that book?
Yeah, man, absolutely. So yeah, third book, I've written a couple books, one specifically on seminar sales, just kind of that structure from marketing to sales. And then a book specifically called Intentional Influence, which is really how to influence situations with your language, but not just your language, body language, everything like that. So it's really the art of communicating. And then this book here has been birthed out of the last couple of years from March of 2020 to really what I've been doing or focusing on is the King's Council, which is we're a faith-based coaching organization. And partly the reason that I started this company was really just out of that feeling of unfulfillment, in which I realized that, you know, at that time I would have been 34 years of age. So, you know, still, I felt like I've lived many lives, but still just felt unfulfilled. It's like, is this really the point of why I'm living? It like is really, I'm just going to go start another business. And it may sound kind of douchey, and I totally get that. Like, but it wasn't really about that. Like the thrill of the hunt for me is what I loved. Right. And it was like, even I think about back in the days of like dating, it was like getting the girl was the fun part. It wasn't like going home. It was like, could I still do it? It was the thrill of the hunt. And I realized like that may be something sick that I'm just twisted and I'm like that. But I think most entrepreneurs are like that. Like we love the challenge of starting something and then growing it, right? And then what I found myself doing was almost like self-sabotaging it, of like, okay, I've done it. To the point of even my first marriage, bro, like I shamefully say it, but I checked out the moment she said I do. I was like, mission accomplished. What next? Mm-hmm. Versus thinking of it like how I approach this with my wife now, Ashley. It's like, as I mentioned before, I'm selling her every day. That like that's my challenge. It isn't about like getting her to say yes. It's continually getting her to say yes. And through just kind of what I've learned and done through all these different businesses, I realized that you could be successful at a lot of things and still feel like a failure. And what I mean by that is, if you're not operating for the God-given intended purpose of why you were created, you're going to always feel like a failure. Like I've got a treadmill, I have a home gym here, a treadmill that is an incredibly successful clothes hanger, right? Like, man, that thing hangs my clothes like no other. It has an inch of dust on it. It fills with dust beautifully. So could it be successful at doing that? Sure. But is it failing based upon the reason why it was created? Absolutely. And that's when I had that aha moment of in really through kind of the spring, or excuse me, the fall about 3 years ago, where I was just sitting on my couch and I'm like, man, life sucks. Like, from the outside looking in, people would say, you got it all going on, right? And as much as we could do what we want, when we want, where we want, for the most part, you know, I'm not rocking like a jet or anything like that yet. But it was, we've lived a pretty good life. And from a worldly standpoint, it's like, it wasn't about just going to start something new and you know, doing that challenge that I had mentioned of like the thrill of that anymore. It was more about like, God, what was I created to do? And knowing that there's a bigger impact far and above just meaningless products or things that I could take to the marketplace. I know that I've been given a gift to create revenue and sales and money right now. What am I going to do with that is really like what's next. And so out of that was the birth of this, our coaching company called the King's Council, which we are, as I mentioned, we're faith-based, but it's like, we're coming together and we absolutely help people crush business and take products to the marketplace, go from employed to deployed, whatever that is that they're looking to do. But then through this, I've realized, just taking a look at over the last decade of my life, there's an actual blueprint here of how to create something very sustainable. And if we go back to creation in Genesis, chapter one of Genesis, whether you are a believer or not, you got to believe something created us. If you think that we were created out of a Big Bang theory, you got way more faith than I do, because the odds of that happening are, it'd be like a bomb going off and a freaking library popping out, right? Like it doesn't, or an encyclopedia popping out. Sorry. So it's like there's a lot more to it. And when I had this kind of aha moment, I was like, well, let's dive into this thing. If I feel like I'm a creator, I've created businesses, why don't I model the original creator, right? And so I really dove into this, and I realized through this creation template, so I would encourage everybody to read, just go read chapter one of Genesis. It's brilliant. If you look at the flow of creating something out of nothing to creating the atmosphere and the culture and ultimately the structure, what we would view as like our operating playbook for our business, to then order, which would be like day four of creation of the sun and the moon, in which God has actually given us time. And we know that we can't manage what we're not measuring. And so what am I measuring within my business then to ultimately create momentum in sales? And what I realized that I did, Martin, was I would go from, I've got an idea, to momentum. And I'd be like, bam, 7 and 8 figures. But the reason that they were quick wins and then, you know, sustainable losses was because I didn't have proper structure. I didn't have proper order in place. And so I've written this book that's really just lays out an entire blueprint of creation. You don't have to be a believer like I am to operate in it, because it works. It's a foolproof plan that works every freaking time. That if you want to build something fast, it's really easy to build something fast and you know, really just to do it on your own. But if you want to build something that's going to be sustainable in something that's going to go far, it's important to do it together, and then built upon this framework or this foundational blueprint, but a specific timing and order of things in place before we get to day six, which is really when he created man, created us, and gave us this commandment to be fruitful, which a lot of people think, if you've ever read it, it's like, well, I'm supposed to go make babies, right? Well, it's not necessarily the context is that we get that, be fruitful and multiply, but it's more so whatever we put our hands to, be fruitful. Like, what does that mean? Have something that is fruitful, of value, that you can take to the marketplace, and then multiply it to subdue the earth and dominate. And so it's what I really believe is our kingdom entrepreneur mandate that we teach throughout this whole book on how to do it appropriately. So if you're going from employed to deployed, you want to start something, you might as well start from the beginning and do it right. Or if you're like I was, and I built all these different companies, still have them today, some of them at least, I realized that, man, there's certain components that I'm missing in this. And so even if you're in business, you have, you know, maybe you have employees, solopreneur, whatever it is, you can put your, what you're building right now, what you've done up against the 7-day blueprint. And it's almost like kind of an x-ray, Martin, where it's like, it'll expose, or it's going to show you exactly where you're missing. So it can kind of be that diagnosis of, okay, I really need to have the playbook here, because nobody, we can't manage what we're not measuring. And so if I don't even know what the heck I'm supposed to be measuring, then how can we ever experience any momentum and any growth, right? So it's kind of just, it exposes some of those leaky holes in our system or our foundational blueprint to really, truly grow our business and scale it. And, you know, I know that's not the goal of everybody, but if you're like most entrepreneurs, I'm not happy just going to make $100,000. Like, show me how to make $100 million, or give me something else to do. And if that's you listening to this, then I would encourage you to get this blueprint and just take a peek at hey, where does my business line up with this creation blueprint right now?
So where can they get that?
Bro, the 7dayblueprint.com. So the THE and then the number 7dayblueprint.com.
Nice. The7dayblueprint.com. I'm excited for it as well. I think, like you said, like if you're not growing your diet, you didn't say this, but like the sort of momentum behind things. I mean, I'm definitely a creator as well. And I definitely, the thrill of the hunt, that definitely resonates with me. And actually, I've built businesses, built them really, really fast. And then it's kind of like, now it's like a business. And I'm like, I want to go back to creating something, right? Kind of thing, right?
Yep.
And, you know, and definitely I recognize that's where I need to get out of my way, right? And let the teams and sort of run the business, and I can keep creating within that business. Is the ideal situation. And it's something that is really, really exciting and important, but you can jump into self-sabotage quite quickly or sort of moving on to something earlier than you should. So having a blueprint to be able to sort of look at, like, well, so why might this not be going how I planned? Oh, okay. Number right. Seven. That's what it was. So the 7dayblueprint.com, folks, is where you need to go to check that out. At this part in the show, Riley, we like to mix it up. We go into the rapid fire question round. I ask the questions quickly. You can choose the speed of your return of my serves. Are you up for that?
I'm ready, man. Let's do this.
Are you two thumbs up for that?
Two thumbs.
There they are. All right, let's jump in as I drag my questions over. If you ever had to start again, and we are actually talking about like creating and the thrill of the hunt, so it's relevant here. If you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
Financial services, insurance industry.
Oof, that was ready to go. Is there a why behind that? It's not sexy. So
it's not sexy.
What's the why behind that?
Right. Because it is, just knowing what I know. I mean, I have an insurance agency now. Knowing what I know with the impact that it has to create wealth, but also the tools that are available to sustain that wealth, is just something that because I literally just had this with one of our coaching clients a couple weeks ago, where he's like, I don't know what, he asked me this question. If you were to start all over again, what would you do? And no doubt in my mind, I would go down that path. And dude, when I was 19, I actually became like an insurance rep for Prudential Financial. And what I hated about it was, go talk to your friends and family. And it's like, I don't want to do that. That's partly why I stopped doing it. But now what I know about marketing and sales and getting people to make a decision, but how to reach a cold audience, no doubt in my mind, that's the absolute best way to go about it.
Nice. What's the most common or biggest mistake you see leaders making?
Not leading by example. So many people, and this is part of the reason that, you know, while I still do coaching, I still have my sales teams and my other companies. Dude, tomorrow I'm going out. I'm driving 5 hours north of here to darn near Canada, and I'm doing a seminar to 17 people. And it's partly just, I always want to make sure, I'm never going to tell somebody to do something that I wouldn't do myself. And so that's why I don't coach anybody to do door knocking. Because I just won't do it, right? It's incredible honor and respect for somebody that does it. It's just, I've never gone there and done that. So how can I expect to lead somebody down that path? And so I freaking hate for the most part, I hate the coaching industry because everybody tells you, I grew up just being told like, hey, do what I say, not what I do. Mm. And I've, from that point, I've always just thought this is such BS. I'm going to go back to looking for the fruit in other people's life. I'm going to look for that. And if you're a leader and you ain't got any fruit, or the fruit's rotten from the inside out, don't expect to be a leader for long.
I think that's brilliant. And I mean, I say that to our staff here at Nubra as well. Like, there isn't a job in this company or a task in this company that I haven't done, actually, and wouldn't right. continue to do if needed. And I think that means a lot when they're doing the less desirable or boring task, knowing that actually that the founder and CEO has done this right. and will jump in, you know, roll up his sleeves and do it right alongside you.
It's good.
How do you identify a good business partner?
Oh, man, this is a good one. You date them first, and you back to that fruit in their lives, because I've got incredible examples of this working for the good and incredible examples of this like being a complete nightmare. And I'm going to first off say, if you don't have to have a business partner, don't do it. Just because it sucks. I can say that. And I know if my business partners were here with me right now, they would agree. Yeah. But relationships that I've jumped into, no different than a marriage, like you got to date them first. And because there's so much that can look great from the outside in. But here's the thing that I found out. I want to go out to dinner with them. I want to see how they treat the wait staff. I want to see the inside of their car. Because believe it or not, I think the inside of people's cars is a telltale sign of who they are as a human being. Like, is it clean or is there freaking crap everywhere? these are just like little things that I picked up. And a big one is, how's their home life? Are their kids respectful? Are they actually, is it just like a chaotic nightmare? And I've got business partners that I've got both examples of those, and I can tell you how they run their household. And this isn't like a dictator standpoint. It's just like, is there structure in their order in their life at all, period? If there isn't, I have no interest in being in business with that type of person.
Beautiful. I mean, the wait staff thing, I think I'm definitely one of those silent watchers. I enjoy observing people when they think they're in a situation where perhaps they are, you know, I mean, they're being served, right? So the hierarchy is there. And if they are treating me differently to the person bringing us their food, that's a big red flag for me. The car test, I would definitely fail. So you wouldn't partner with me. But again, two young children, right? Two young children who eat on journeys.
Well, that's understandable, right? I get that. That's understandable.
What is one of your proudest moments?
Oh, man. I'm trying not to be like this, the cheese ball of, you know, my day my daughter was born. But really, dude, the day my daughter was born was, I was a train wreck as a human being. Meaning it was 2012. I was crushing financially. And it was a time where, like, you would think I would be like, okay, Riley, it's time to get your freaking crap together. But I really didn't. I wasn't in that position because, dude, I was rolling in the dough. I could do what I want, when I want, where I want. And so I can't even really say that was probably my proudest moment. But what I think now is my daughter is 10 years old, and the relationship that she and her stepmom Ashley have now, I can just say is, I don't know if there's a specific moment, but I think it's just a testament to how incredible God is in just restoring that type of relationship and then just creating just, you know, what I know is really blossoming from that. And so not really like a proudest moment, but what I'm probably most proud of is that type of relationship in my life.
What's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
Interesting. I'm a Green Bay Packer fan from a football standpoint. So I don't know if that's interesting, but I always joke, I live in Minnesota now, and this is where like Viking Central, but I grew up in South Dakota. And I always joke that there's a reason why South Dakota doesn't have a football team. And it's because if they did, then Minnesota would want one too. And so you got to be in Minnesota to really get that. But that's how I get to razz on them.
No, I like, I think I got it from context then. And actually, if memory serves, the Saints and Vikings were just in London. Actually,
that's right. That's right. Yes, they were, man. Vikings squeaked that one out.
There we go. What daily routines do you have, whether morning or evening, that have helped make you successful?
Yeah, I'm big on just instilling habits in life. I think, you know, our thoughts become our actions become our habits. Habits just really become ultimately the legacy in our life, whether it's good or bad. And so every morning, the thing for me to create any sort of habit, it's important to create a trigger. And so I've got a little trigger in my life of, hey, feet hit the ground, water I pound. And so I know that I've just slept probably 7, 8 hours in a night, you know, if I'm lucky. And so I need to hydrate. And so just the very first thing subconsciously that I'm doing is feet hit the ground. I'm walking to go pound some water. And then I'm, you know, going to brush my teeth and kind of freshen up. I spend usually a little bit of time reading and in prayer in the morning before going to hit my workout. So it's nothing mind blowing or anything like that, but the biggest thing is just putting those little triggers in place. Cause for me too, a trigger in the evening time that I used to have was drinking wine, and I love wine. I like it, but I was starting to get a little fat, and I realized that one glass turned into one bottle turned into two bottles. And I'm like, man, I think I might have a problem here. So putting a trigger in place to wind my evening down was just as important as a morning routine in my head as well. So I think you can use those triggers really at any time throughout the day.
I like that. What book or books changed your mindset or life?
Book would be The Science of Success. I can't even remember his name now. The Science of Success. I think he's in prison actually now. The author for putting people in like a sweatshop in the desert here, and I think some of them died. The concepts behind the book, I think, were definitely life-changing for me. And just understanding that there's principles to this thing called life, no different than gravity, no different than, you know, the inertia. Like there's true laws and principles in life. And to understand those and actually work with those, or no different than like an airplane isn't like bound by gravity, but it supersedes it to do what exactly it is designed to do. And so great book that expanded my mindset that I've taken into really, you know, everything else that I've done since then.
Beautiful. What advice would you give your younger self?
Action brings clarity. And the real reason that I think so many people get paralyzed from decision making, or for fear of making the wrong decision, which at the end of the day, if you're not making a decision, that's still a decision in itself. And even if you make the wrong decision, we talk a lot about, you know, I'm on the fence with something. It's like, I don't know which side to get off on. Just pick a freaking side. Because even if it's the wrong side, at least you found out quicker, and then you can hop back on the other side. Because most of the decisions that we make, most of them aren't like life altering. It's not like I'm going to die. Could it be financially a $100,000 mistake or something? Sure. But you got to be, if you're willing to roll those dice, you got to be willing to make that decision and then clean up the mess if it's the wrong decision. If you're not, then continue just to remain bound with wherever it is that you're at right now.
Love that. What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
Man, food or drink. That is a tough one. Food, I guess I would say sushi. How about that? I love some good sushi, even though I live like I'm landlocked here in Minnesota. So it's hard to get real good sushi, but if you can find some, man, it's delicious. Drink would be, how about this? I've gotten into drinking apple cider vinegar. I don't know if you guys rock this over where you're at, man, but a little shot of that, it wakes me up in the morning. No caffeine or anything in it, but it's really just because it tastes awful. It wakes me up right away in the morning. It's supposed to have some detoxifying effects as well. So I don't know if that's true or not, but So I'm told.
So you're told. Yeah, I mean, apple cider vinegar or ACV as you see it now online, like people love an abbreviation. Yeah, it comes now in all kinds of forms, right? Like you're doing it the hardcore way.
Hardcore, man. Lots of people don't give me any
consuming
tablets.
It as gummies or tablets or whatever.
Right. But, nah, man, I'm gargling
it's
that
supposed
stuff
to have benefits, right? It's supposed to have benefits. As you said, I'm not sure. But that brings us to the final question. And in many ways, it's the most important one, Riley. What makes you happiest?
Man, being, this is a good one, dude, because this is what I think I've always struggled with is being content where I'm at, yet still dissatisfied. Because I think I've been, up until, you know, really the last couple of years, I've been extremely discontent with life. And so now that I've really realized what I believe is my purpose on this earth and why I was created, back to that treadmill example that I talked about. It's like, hey, once you find out why you were created, now everything else is like, it's great. I can be content with that, but I can still be extremely dissatisfied. And so I feel like I've been, you know, I've gone through a lot of junk in my life to get to this point where it's like, okay, I'm very content. I'm very happy when I'm present where my feet are, not thinking about the next business deal or the next thing. Cause as entrepreneurs, that's like us. Like, it's like, it's hard to shut the brain off. This is why I would drink wine at night. And it's like, how do I shift environments? And it wasn't really until I truly got an understanding of the purpose of why I was created, that allows me to be very, very present now when I'm with my wife, when I'm with my daughter, family time, and but still have that extreme dissatisfaction and why we continually crush business. And I will still do that until the day that I die. But coming back to just getting that contentness of being where your feet are was really eye-opening for me.
Amazing. That's a phenomenal answer. And yeah, that discontent or not being present is something that happens to, I mean, most entrepreneurs, I imagine. We're all dreamers, right? We're all by design thinking about what's next, what's in the future, what, you know, this step one, if I can take that to step 50, what does that look like? And yeah, sometimes, I mean, it's very common amongst entrepreneurs turning to some kind of substance to become mindful. And, you know, the healthy ways might be meditation or yoga or mindfulness practice in some format. And then the unhealthy ways are the drink and drugs, right? And they all work. They all work, right. And they all have different side effects, right? They all work, but it's a symptom of trying to be in the future and finding and struggling to get into the present. And you know, it's incredible that you've almost wrapped a mission around what you're doing in the present. So that it's like, you know, I've got a mission here, right? I'm you know, making my wife say I do every day, right? Yeah. You know, I'm in reinforcing this relationship I have with my daughter, and it's wonderful. And that's a wonderful answer to top off a wonderful podcast episode. At this point, I'd like to ask you, do you have anything you'd like to ask or request of the audience listening today?
Man, I would just encourage people. We talked about the 7-day blueprint, and just do it. Get that. It's a free download, and just put your business in. It's not even just business. I know we're talking to most entrepreneurs, but at the end of the day, this works with your relationship. Like, hey, do you guys, are you on the same page with the vision you have for your life, the structure, the order? And this is something that Ash and I had to implement, you know, even just recently. This isn't like something that I've just lived out and like have proven this thing for decades. It's like, no, I'm living this thing and working this thing out right now, just like I think a lot of listeners are. But I've realized that there is something to be said about this creation template. And so Ash and I, every single week, hop on or we get together and we game plan our week. Are we on the same page with who's doing what? So there's no miscommunication, because at the end of the day, if you can get really good at communicating, whether it's with your spouse or your team, there's nothing you can't do, right? Like, communication, it comes down to literally everything. If people feel heard, seen, and felt that they were understood, you can freaking rule worlds together. But most people are just leaving that on the table. And so if you're crushing your business, but your home life's a wreck, match it up with this blueprint. If your home life is amazing, but your business sucks, match it up with this blueprint. It'll expose where those leaky holes are, so you can actually not just diagnose it. Because I'm a big believer, like, I don't care about the data unless I know what I can do with it. And so the application is probably the most important part to it, because you can look at a scale and know you're fat, but what the hell are you going to do about it? Right. Yeah, so like taking action on that is the most important component. So take some freaking action.
So the 7-day blueprint.com, number seven, blueprint.com is where you need to find that and take this next step into the very exciting journey that you're about to take, whether you know it or not. Riley, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us today on this episode. It's been exciting. I've not wanted to interrupt you, but there's been a lot of similarities, a lot of synergy in what you've been saying and how I think, and some of the struggles that I've had on my journey. And I know it will resonate with many of the audience listening today. And, you know, if it has, folks, you know where to go. But yeah, once again, Riley, thank you so much for taking the time today to share on the Smart Destiny podcast.
Thanks, Martin. Have a good day, man.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all, and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.